Isaiah chapter 40 is where we're going to begin, but I want us to back up into chapter 39. Set the big context. In Isaiah 39, of course, Isaiah prophesied over a long, long extended time period. We are picking up during the reign of Hezekiah. And in chapter 39, one of the more familiar things that happened in his reign, things are well with Judah. God's blessed them. Hezekiah has been a faithful man, a faithful king, and God's blessed them. And they have storehouses. They have rooms slap full of gold. Things that they have just accumulated. It's a prosperous time in Judah. He has some visitors from a nation that's just starting to grow. Just starting to become what we know they will become. There are these visitors from Babylon who show up. And Hezekiah basically opens up the storehouse to them. And he takes them and look at this. I want you to see what we've got. Take a look at all these things. And not long after they're gone, Isaiah shows up. And here's what he tells Hezekiah in verse 5. Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Because the days are coming that all that is in your house and all which your fathers have laid up in store to this very day will be carried to Babylon. Nothing will be left, says the Lord." Isaiah shows up and he tells Hezekiah, all that stuff you show Babylon, it's going to end up in Babylon. The day's coming, they're going to conquer this city, they're going to conquer this nation, and everything in it will be taken or destroyed. All that gold you showed them, it's going to become in their storehouses one day. If that weren't bad enough, verse 7, your sons and those that come from you, your children, your descendants, they will be taken too. They will be taken away. They will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. This nation's going down, Hezekiah. And everything in it's going to be taken, from all the gold to all the people. And the sons and daughters, they're going to be taken too. And the people, they're going to be taken and they're going to be abused. And they're going to become servants to Babylon. That's a downer. That's not the nice prophecies that you want to hear about. But with that having been said, Isaiah continues to prophesy. And when he comes to chapter 40, what we call chapter 40, the tone changes. He's still prophesying about future days. He's still prophesying about people who haven't even been born yet. But along with the captivity that he just prophesied about, chapter 40 begins to talk about the remnant that's going to come back. Here's a good time for us to look at chapter 40 because of what we're doing on Wednesday nights. We've been 2 or 3 months now looking at the remnant that came back. That remnant that we're studying, when Ezra showed back up, none of them were born at this time. But there were prophecies made about those who would come back. And that starts in chapter 40. Do you notice how immediately the tone changes? He has just got through saying, all the stuff's going to be taken. Your children's going to be taken. Can't get any worse, right? Verse 1. Comfort ye. Comfort ye, my people, says the Lord. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. Chapter 39. Captivity's coming, destruction's coming, everything will be taken. Chapter 40 begins, but take some comfort. He repeats that word twice. There is comfort to be had because there is future pardon that's going to be received. And then that last phrase in verse 2, there's going to be a time when the punishment has been served. Now, later on, the prophets will be more clear about that. It was going to be a 70-year period. But he ends verse 2 by saying that the sins are going to be paid for. There will be a time served, and then there will be comfort. There will be pardon. There's going to be people coming out of it. Not just captivity, chapter 39, but there will be a remnant that will come home. We've been studying about them for several months now. Here's Isaiah talking about that. Before Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, any of those guys, they weren't a part of this conversation. But we've been studying about them. There was pardon given, and there was comfort that would come. In verses 3 through 5, when we begin to read it, you are immediately going to start thinking about John the Baptist. There was obviously a secondary application of one who was going to pave the way for a one who would follow him. We're going to read this, and because we have the New Testament, immediately we're going to think about John. But in the immediate context of it, think about a different pathway being cleared. Think about it being a pathway through the desert of Ezra leading those back. Think about it being Zerubbabel and Joshua as they led God's people back. Look in verse 3. The voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley will be exalted. Every mountain will be made low. The crooked will be made straight. The rough places will be plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed. All flesh will see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Obviously, we see the secondary application. That's the main thing we focus on. But that clearing of a pathway, that wasn't talking about the Eisenhower interstates, as nice as that makes our life. But there was going to be a group who's going to be, there's going to be captivity. And there was going to be a group coming out of that. And they were going to walk through the deserted areas. And they were going to be delivered. They were going to make it home. The captives will find a pathway back. And then there's an exclamation point. The mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Verse 5. That's the only evidence that Isaiah's given. It's not one of those things. Can you imagine a courtroom and there's a trial going on and the good lawyer does their part and they just lay out, here's what happened. And then they got all this realm of evidence. Days and days and different avenues of evidence. There's exactly one source of evidence for this. And that is the Lord spoke it. That's all Isaiah has to say. God has said it. This is going to happen. That's the exclamation point of how comfort is going to one day come. That's the exclamation point of how pardon is going to one day be received. Can we make some applications to ourselves? The Lord spoke things. And when He speaks them, they are true. And so can you imagine that exclamation point being made? And that didn't happen, but I want you to imagine. Imagine Hezekiah then speaks up. And imagine maybe Hezekiah, or those who would have read this later, even while in captivity. Imagine captives reading through the scrolls and sitting with the scribes. And there's going to be comfort. There's going to be pardon. There's going to be a pathway home. And can you imagine them maybe straight up? Oh, so we're going to be really strong one day. One of these days, there's going to be a group of us so powerful that we're just going to ramroad our way home. We can think like that, can't we? Verse 6. The voice said, cry. And he said, what will I cry? Here's what you cry. All flesh is grass. All the goodliness thereof is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades, before the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Because the breath of the Lord blows upon it, surely the people is grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Can you imagine the first exclamation point? God said it. And then can you imagine, because we are who we are, can you imagine us thinking higher of ourselves than we are? Yeah, we're going to get out of here. We're going to bust this joint wide open one day. We're going to go home one day. They can't keep us down forever. Can't keep a good man down. And then Isaiah says, it's going to be nothing about your strength. It won't be anything about the strength of the captives. We are grass. We are flowers that the wind blows and the leaves just go shuddering. It's not about our strength. It's not about our power. It's not about our might. We're going to find out whose strength is behind it in a moment. But now here's the second exclamation point that we need to pick up on. Verse 5, the mouth of the Lord spoke it. And now look at the last phrase in verse 8. The word of our God stands forever. Put those two together. God has spoken something, and what He has spoken will endure. What He has spoken is not bound by time. What He has spoken is not bound by generations or by worldly leaders. Verse 5, God spoke it. Verse 8, what He has spoken will endure. There's the hope for the future remnant. Me and you could just somehow mentally put ourselves back in Babylon in the middle of that 70 years and imagine we cared enough about Scripture that we were with the scribes and we were reading. We were studying. We wanted to know what God told us. And what He told us is there's going to be a pathway home. There's going to be those who are comforted and those who are pardoned. You will get home, not by your strength, but because I am telling you that. And you can trust my word. Well, if it's not going to be about the strength of grass and flowers, if it's not about us, if it's not about the fleshly power, then where is it? Look at verse 9. O Zion that brings good tidings, get thee out of the high mountain. O Jerusalem that brings good tidings, lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up, do not be afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God, behold, here we are, behold. The Lord God will come with a strong hand, and His arm will rule for Him. Behold, His reward is with Him, and His work before Him. Can you put the concepts together? Can you put the thought processes together? It's not about the power of the flesh. The power of the flesh is grass and flowers that fades away in the heat. It's not about the arm of man. It's not about the power of the flesh. It's about the arm of God, verse 10. It's about His strength. So now let's pause. Isaiah, writing to the future remnant, not even born yet. He says, you're going to get out. Pardon's going to come. Comfort's coming. And it's coming through the arm of God, the strength of God. Mark your spot. Turn to Ezra chapter 7. We just studied this. So now let's go back and let's just look a second. Because Ezra was a part of that remnant. He was a part of the second group, as you well know. He was a part of that second group that came back. He is that unborn remnant that's being spoken of, prophesied about. But remember what was said about Ezra when we were introduced to him in chapter 7? It said he was a ready scribe, a skilled scribe. Do you remember what that meant? He knew the law. He knew the prophets. He knew what God had said. It was said about him that he had a mind to learn it, to do it, and to teach it. Well, in that learning, can you imagine a ready scribe with a mind set on learning what God has to say? Can you imagine Ezra at some point in his life having read what we call Isaiah chapter 40? Can you imagine Ezra, who was born in captivity, born under the reign of a Persian empire, never seen Jerusalem with his eyes, but he has read about a pardon coming. He has read about a remnant. And he knows how it's all going to be made possible. And now here's that phrase that kept coming over and over and over. Ezra chapter 7, talking about that return. Look what Ezra says in verse 6. It says, the king granted him all of his request according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. Look in verse 9. It talked about the four-month journey that they made. And that last phrase, according to the hand of his God. Look in chapter verse 28 of chapter 7. Ezra's own prayer. He has extended mercy to me before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty princes. And I was strengthened as the hand of the Lord my God was upon me. You see the same thing in chapter 8. Verse 22. You see the same thing in chapter 8, verse 31. All along, you've got Ezra realizing this is not because of our strength. We're grass. It's not because of our might. We're flowers that fades away. We are going to be delivered by the hand of our God. Ezra's a ready scribe, and he knew what Isaiah had prophesied long ago. Go back to chapter 40 now, because here's the beauty of the God that we serve. Here's the beauty of the God that created us. Because what we've seen so far is a mighty, powerful hand that is not blown away with the wind. But now look at that same hand in verse 11. The same hand, the mighty arm of God. Look in verse 11. He, speaking of God, He will feed His flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs with His arm and carry them into His bosom, and He will lead those that are with young. The same mighty arm of God that's going to deliver and bring back is the, as powerful as that arm is, here's the comfort of that very same arm. The same arm so powerful to deliver all these promises that is being spoken is also a tender arm, a compassionate arm, a comforting arm. It says with the arm that's going to bring them in to His bosom. That's the God that we serve. Here in two verses, we see the strength and the power and the comfort and the care and the tenderness. That's the God that created us. That's the wonderful God Isaiah is describing, and the same one that we serve. And then he begins to talk about that wonderful God, a powerful God and a comforting God. And then he asks in verse 12, describing that powerful, comforting God. He describes it as one who has measured the waters in the hollow of His hand. Can you imagine? We look at the globe, you look at a map, and you see blue everywhere. As you learned in what, fifth grade geography class, 75% of the world covered in water. He describes as God as one who can hold it in the palm of His hand. Measures the water in the hollow of His hand. He meets out heavens with a span. How big are the skies? How big are the universe? Oh, about that big. That's how big it is. That's how God measures it. He comprehends the dust of the earth in a measure. He weighs the mountains in a balance and the hills in scales. That's the God we serve. Verse 14. With who did He take counsel? Who gave Him plans? Who gave Him some advice when He made those mountains and waters and hills? With whom did He take counsel? Who instructed Him? Who taught Him in the path of judgment? Who taught Him knowledge? Who showed Him the way of understanding? This room is full of people of all varying degrees and skills and talents and jobs and professions. We were all trained and we were all taught to do whatever it is that we do. You weren't 6 years old knowing what you know. Me and you have answers to this question. Who gave you understanding about your skill level? Who gave you knowledge about these things that you now do every day? Well, me and you have answers to that. Well, there's an answer to this one too. Who did God go for instruction? What did He get? Who gave Him wisdom? Who gave Him understanding? No one. There's no one who's been His counselor. Verse 15. The nations are like a drop in a bucket. They're going to give Him advice. They're a drop in a bucket. Come and go. The nations are a drop in a bucket. They're counted as small dust on the balance. Because He takes the isles as if it's a very little thing. Could you imagine going back? Me and you don't have the balances. We don't understand that. But we know enough about how a balance works. Can you imagine when me and you go to the market and it's not posted on there what the price is, and there's no scanner that puts it into the computer? No, there's going to be the scales, and they're going to balance something out. And we want it to be very, very fair scales, right? Can you imagine you and I, as the scales are about to be measured, they're about to put our weed on it or our whatever on it. And we, oh, no, wait a minute. There's a piece of dust on that scale. Would you get rid of that piece of dust? No, we want a fair scale, but we're not going to be worried about one piece of lint that has fallen onto that scale. Verse 15, that's what nations are. In God's eyes, the big picture, nations are drops in the bucket. Yeah, that includes the United States. Nations are pieces of lint and dust floating through the air. That includes China. And that includes whoever you want to put in there. Can we see how great and how powerful He is? And can we realize the flower and the grass that we are, that's just going to burn up. In verse 17, all nations before Him are as nothing. They are counted to Him less than nothing and vanity. World powers come, world powers go. They rise up, they vanish away. Dust Now remember that when we go past, make a vote in a couple of weeks. Remember who we are and remember whose world this is. Verse 18, let's talk about how ridiculous some responses to him were. Verse 18, to whom will you liken to God? What we've seen so far is powerful arm, yet a comforting arm. What we've seen is a God who has no counselor, who did not have to have somebody else teach him wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Verse 18, who are we going to liken to that? Who are we going to compare to that? The workmen, here's their answer to that. The workman is, we're going to melt a graven image, and the goldsmith will spread it over gold, and then we're going to cast silver chains on it, and then there's going to be somebody who comes in with this wood that's going to last a long, long, long time, wood that won't rot, and we're going to seek unto him a cunning workman that prepares a graven image that will not be moved. You know, how are we going to liken to a God like this? Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll get somebody who's really good at gold, and we'll get somebody who's really good at silver, and we'll get somebody who's really good with word, and we'll just put them all together. Oh, and we'll make something. Verse 21, have you not known? Have you not heard? Me and you would the phrase I guess me and you would use in 2016. Really? Have you lost your mind? Are you serious? Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? Can you imagine Isaiah? Really? That's what you're going to compare to God. That's what you're going to come up with for yourself. It's he, not that molten image, by the way. It's he that sits on the horizon of the earth. He's the one who sees all out, sees everything. It's he that the inhabitants of there are as grasshoppers. And they stretch out the heavens as a curtain, spreads them out as a tent. Let's see. Let's get a good tally. Let's take a dose of humility. What are we? Well, we've been described as grass. What are we? We've been described as flowers that fade away, lose their beauty. We've been described as dust. We've been described as grasshoppers. Verse 23, the one who sees the horizon, he brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they will barely be planted. They will barely be sown. Their stock will barely take root in the earth. And he will blow on them and they will wither, and like a whirlwind takes away the stubble. Think about world nations that have come and have gone. It says they barely get good into the dirt. They barely take roots. And then they've blown and gone away. Can you go back through history and look at that? Remember when we look back in the time periods when Egypt was a world power. We look at the time when Assyria, Babylon, Persia. See you later. We could read about the Roman Empire. In the New Testament. Gone. And then there's that 400-year period of what we call the period of silence when the Greek Empire came about. You remember how old Alexander the Great was when he died? Alexander the Great, conqueror of the world, dead before he was 33. Gone. And there will come a day, whether you and I are still alive or not, there will come a day when the United States is blown away like the dust, verse 24. And every world power we know is blown away before they barely get planted. Remember who we are and remember who God is. That's what Isaiah is trying to let us see. Verse 25. Now, I want you to imagine for a second. Let's go back. Imagine you are a captive in Babylon. And you're reading about this remnant. But it sure doesn't look, you're a slave. And things don't look good for you. Can you put yourself in Babylon? Down, depressed, discouraged. Or maybe that's how you feel today. You don't got to go to Babylon as a slave to become down and depressed and discouraged. What's God have to say about that? Verse 25. To whom will you liken me? Whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high. Look at all the created things that brings them out of the host of their number. He calls them by name, by the greatness of his might. For that he is strong in power. Nice dark night. You look up in the skies and you see all those stars. And by the way, we're only seeing part of them. We're only seeing the part our hemisphere allows us to see. You see all those stars. Verse 26 says, God knows every one of them by name. Me and you look at them, we just see a vastness of stuff. God knows them by name. How's that possible? He created them. He created them. They're not just unknown, shiny, bright things to Him. They have a name, and He knows every one of them. He created every one of them. Now, can you imagine? You're down and discouraged in Babylon. God doesn't care. God just doesn't care. God doesn't see. And what Isaiah's telling him is God knows who the stars are. God knows every name of the stars. He created them. You think He doesn't know you? You don't think He knows what you're going through? You think He doesn't care? Verse 27, why do you say, O Israel, my way is hidden of the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from God? He says, don't say it anymore. Don't question whether or not God sees. He sees the stars. You know He sees you. Don't question whether or not God cares. He cares about the stars. You know He cares about you. Verse 28, for the third time, have you not known? Have you not heard? Don't you know better? Have you not heard, have you not known that the everlasting God, the Lord and Creator of the ends of the earth, does not faint? He doesn't grow weary. There is no searching for His understanding. Verse 30, even the youth will faint and be weary. The young men will fall. God's strength is different than that. Me and you, depending on where you are in the cycle of life as we see it, we understand that the strength of youth fades away. This room's full of a lot of people who have lost the strength of their youth. It's full of a lot of people who are in the process of losing the strength of their youth. What God is saying is that's not how my strength is derived. My strength will not fade away. My strength is not just some young man's strength that's going to one day fade. No, I am strong and I will remain strong. My arm can deliver you. My arm can comfort you. And I won't get tired. Verse 29. He gives power to the faint. He doesn't grow weary. We do. And yet here He is offering strength to us. Our strength through Him. He gives power to the faint. He gives power to those that have no might. He increases their strength. Verse 30, those that wait upon the Lord for help. Those who wait upon the Lord for their strength. That's the inference being made. Those who will wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings as eagles. They will run. They will not be weary. They will walk and they will not faint. What a wonderful message if we could see the context. Writing to those who are going to be slaves. Writing to those who are going to be homeless. Writing to those who are going to have the courage to come back. And He says, my strength will provide. My arm will deliver. And I will comfort you. I will not grow weary, and it's through my strength you can make it. Can we make application to ourselves? We're not in Babylon, but we're in a foreign land. And there is a strong land who is compassionate and is concerned, and through Him we endure. Get your psalm books out. Isaiah's incredible prophecy that he just made to the remnant who are going to come back to a home. You and I, in the spiritual sense, travel to our home. God's strength, God's arm, God's comfort, all been promised to us. What are we going to do with that? How are we going to respond to that? Have we not known? Have we not heard? And will we act? Isaiah asked the prophets, have you known and heard? Me and you, we can answer that. The question we're asking today by way of invitation is, what are we going to do with what we've known? And what are we going to do with what we have heard? Whether Christian or non-Christian, take advantage of that call while we stand and sing.